You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal, and joining me on the show today is Nathan Gilmore, English teacher at North Gwinnett High School. Nathan, did I manage to get the name right this time?
Yes, indeed. That's the high school where I teach, and just drove into my driveway and jumped on the computer to talk some Democratic National Convention.
Awesome. Well, before we get to that convention, what's going on around the network?
You know, not a lot. I actually checked when I was making up show notes for today, and the last reported recording on the Christian Humanist Radio Network was our episode on the Republican National Convention.
Right.
So it's a slow month for the network. I imagine people are starting school years and such, so that's probably what's keeping them slowed down. I know that's what kept me from recording sooner than we did. So, keep listening in. Before They Were Live, that's the name of the show, continues to record, as does the Christian Feminist podcast. I've got a few book interviews that I've got the authors, involved in email correspondence. We just can't get our schedules together. So there will be episodes, just not right now.
Well, listeners can look forward to all of that. And I've got this interesting note here on the outlines. We are talking this week about the Democratic National Convention.
Yes,
and Nathan says that he watched it on YouTube because he was busy playing volleyball while the convention was going on.
Yeah, because I really enjoy playing volleyball. Unfortunately, I was driving my daughter to volleyball games and practices. I was getting home at, 9 at night, 10 at night, and frankly, turning on the TV to watch political speeches just didn't appeal to me. And besides that, I had to have lesson plans ready for the morning.
Which is perfectly reasonable, I think. I did watch it, as with the Republicans, kind of gavel to gavel. As with the Republicans, I tried to watch it when my kids were not around, because you never know what's going to be said at these things.
Yeah, I mean, the DNC, I mean, I think they tried to get edgy with some of their speeches, as edgy as 78-year-old guys get.
Yeah, I for all of their attempted generation of positive energy, I thought in some ways this was a much tamer convention, and I guess maybe we should start with our big picture perspectives here. My impression was they're going for sort of four things. They're trying to go for enthusiasm, and joy is the word they kept using, right? Joy.
Oh my goodness.
Over and over and over.
In my notes, I eventually started writing joy, and then in parentheses, drink.
Yeah. Well, as an intentional contrast to the Republican convention, which to some extent, when you're the party out of power, you've got to say things are awful and everything is terrible, and that's why you should vote for us.
Right, right.
Donald Trump has, at least as long as he's been involved in national politics, has had a tendency to scale that up. Even his inaugural address talked about factories like tombstones, scattered across our country. So
yes.
The Democrats are doubling down on the opposite of that. So That's one sort of theme they were going for. They didn't really have nightly themes the way the Republicans did. They just had a sort of constant message. One is, we are the party of normal joy, normalcy and joy, however, I don't know exactly.
Yes,
how
yes,
that.
Yes.
A second theme, they were obviously spending lots of time talking about abortion based on the 2020 election and 2020 election results and some of the smaller elections that took place in 2023. I think they've decided that this is a winning issue for them. So it is the one issue that was mentioned. They didn't get into any policy weeds. They worked very hard to tie it to other policies that are not abortion, but are in the sort of general realm. So they talked about contraception. They talked about various things of that nature. We're all sort of tied together. So that's the one issue that was mentioned, although, again, the weeds of policy was not really brought up.
Right.
And
but honestly, I don't think of that as something that conventions do. I mean, that's something I think of more as a party platform thing.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you might at least mention policies. Like
I guess that's true. And honestly, my memory fails me. I mean, you know, when I think of presidents that are policy wonks, I think of Bill Clinton. I mean, was his convention policy heavy?
I mean, I was in my teens. I have no idea.
Oh, true. Okay, true. Never mind.
I will say at the Republican convention, we didn't talk about this, and we should have. The policy they kept bringing up is no tax on tips. Right. They had other policies. They talked about energy. They talked about fossil fuels. They talked about the environment. They talked about a lot of other stuff. Certainly, they talked about immigration and crime. I mean, all of those were there.
Right.
None of that. Right. None of that at this convention. There was a nod to border control. We did hear a tiny bit about that, but this was a very policy light convention.
Yes.
Other than
the
general mention of abortion.
Right.
And then the Democratic convention was very self-consciously not focused on Joe Biden at all.
Right? Yes.
The sitting president was, other than his speech on Monday night and about 20 minutes in front of that speech, he was basically not mentioned, or at least never mentioned separate from Kamala Harris. So it was an interesting convention in that case. I should also mention it was not star-studded. So if you remember the 2016 Democratic convention, wall-to-wall A-lister celebrities, right? Everything from the song that I'm blanking on the name of, where they're all singing it together, and then cameos on stage. You had people going up and giving speeches in support of Hillary Clinton. They didn't do as much of that in 2020, but 2020 was the COVID year, so conventions were different.
Yeah, that was pretty much an infomercial. I mean, at least that's what it felt like.
Yeah. This year, there were some, so that probably the biggest name there was Oprah.
Yes.
And I don't know that she has done a convention before, but that's basically it. There were some
now,
other...
Now Coyle. We also had Stevie Wonder.
And Eva Longoria, and there were a few others. I mean, Oprah's the biggest.
But I'm going to emphasize Stevie Wonder because I love Stevie Wonder, and also because, I mean, frankly, I think he gave a more serious speech than Tim Walz did. So I felt like Tim Walz was the Hulk Hogan speech of this convention. but we'll talk about that later. We'll talk. I'm spoiling the end of the episode here.
Sure. No. So the celebrities have been scaled back. And yeah. I don't know if that's part of the emphasizing that Kamala Harris is just like you and me, that they were trying to do, which every politician has to do. You have to emphasize that I'm the common person. Never mind that none of them are, right? None of them are actually the common person. I mean, she is the vice president of the United States.
I agree with you for the most part, but I mean, you did have these very brief celebrity cameos, but just with a weird sporadic cast of celebrity cameos. So, I mean, you had the brief Mark Hamill trying to make Star Wars jokes about the campaign, which absolutely flopped.
Sure.
You had Steve Kerr and Stephen Curry. Oddly enough, I mean, could they not get any Chicago Bulls? I mean, I feel like, you know, I guess Steve never. Okay, listeners, go ahead and finish writing that email because I really am stupid. Yes, I know Steve Kerr played for the Chicago Bulls, but right now he's the head coach of the Golden State Warriors.
Right. Well, and what you didn't have, you know, you didn't have Tom Cruise rappelling in from the sky, right? I mean, you didn't have. It really wasn't the A-team of Hollywood. Tom Hanks wasn't there. One of the voices that they had in one of their video clips sounded like Morgan Freeman, so maybe they wanted him, or maybe they just had an impersonator. I don't know. They was clearly trying to sound like him if it wasn't actually him.
Yeah.
But again, very, very light on Hollywood and very, very much going for the common man approach.
Yeah, that makes good sense. That makes good sense.
What was your takeaway? How'd you look at sort of the whole thing?
Well, first of all, I mean, I it was a moment for self-examination for me because, I've never been a big vocal partisan of either of the major parties, but just kind of by default, for about 22 years, I was a pretty reliable, boring DNC voter. And long about 2018, I just stopped voting for Democrats for national office. Now, school board positions, things like that, I would still vote for people with Democrat next to their name just because I actually could meet those people and I could see whether they're going to be worth anything, right? But, you know, if there wasn't a good third-party option, which is to say not libertarian, I would just leave those elections blank. Okay. And I've been doing that, like I said, you know, for about 6 years now. And what I realized watching this is maybe just a little taste. I won't say it's the same thing, but a little taste of what all of the people talking about deconstruction in the post-Trump sense experience, because I know objectively that this is a political it's a party convention, and, you know, it's not for me, and, you know, it's for the true believers, and all I know all of this rationally, Coyle, but I was getting so angry listening to these speeches. I mean, and I'll talk about the ones that really got to me, but like I said, I mean, because I used to, I didn't really, you know, cast my identity with the DNC by any means, but I used to vote for them. And now that I don't, they just irritate me in ways that are irrational. So, you know, I've been complaining for the last, you know, 8-10 years about, you know, how the people who call themselves deconstructionists, you know, are just irrationally fixated on evangelicalism. And I'm starting to get why.
Fair enough. I have occasionally voted DNC, mostly at the governor level, just depending on where.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We had a governor in Maryland who was excellent, and I was happy to vote for him. And uh-huh. Same thing with a guy in Wyoming who was solid governor. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't have the same reaction. I just figure it's not a convention for me, just like the Republican convention isn't for me. So
right, right.
Whatever they want to say is fine.
But to dig into some of the speakers, Coyle, I mean, you know, one pair that I think they didn't go first, but I think that they kind of set the stage for the rest of them were Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And, you know, when I was watching them the first time, what kept occurring to me is, you know, these sound like all the rest of the Democrats at this point. When I've become accustomed to thinking of them as, you know, bucking the establishment. And, you know, the question that keeps emerging for me is, you know, to what extent were they toning things down so they didn't overshadow Kamala Harris? And to what extent has the whole party just become like them?
I don't know. And some of that, I'm sure, is the nature of how Kamala Harris got the nomination. Right. We have this kind of interesting situation where nobody has ever voted for Kamala Harris for president in you know, any election. She was out before the Iowa caucus at the beginning of 2020. So she is now the candidate. And part of the point of this convention was to reinforce the idea that there will be no objections to this. When they were counting the ballots, they were very clear. This is only ceremonial. No, you may not object. Right. even the ballots that were objecting, several were voted present. Several were just voted as here. Those were very much downplayed, even in the tone of the speaker's voice. So I would guess that kind of serious conversations were had with Bernie and AOC about, if you want this microphone, here's what you need to do. I don't know that. I'm not behind the scenes at the DNC.
Okay, I gotcha.
I can't imagine them not doing that. Now, with that said, parties will sometimes, I don't know if the DNC has this, but parties will sometimes have rules about who is allowed to speak and who is not. And it might be that since Bernie was a serious candidate 4 years ago and then 8 years ago, he might have a right to be there. I don't know.
Right, right.
But I would guess that conversations were had about the importance of unity, the importance of sharing the single message, the importance of joy, you know, the importance the importance of normality, right? Keep your crazy socialist stuff to the side. Don't praise the Soviet Union from the stage. That sort of thing was probably reinforced.
That makes sense. So, I mean, so your impression is that, you know, once the cameras were off, they went back to being Bernie and AOC.
Oh, I have no idea.
I gotcha.
I don't watch C-SPAN, so I don't know, but sure. That could be easily checked, right?
right. Like I said, I mean, you know, that's that was the part that, you know, is an interesting question for me. The part that, I mean, baffles me on just so many dimensions, the content of the speech, the timing of the speech, just everything about it, is Joe Biden's, you know, what time did he start speaking? Like 11:15 p.m. Eastern?
Yeah, so the first night was scheduled to run, I think, from 5:30 until 10.
Okay.
And he, well, Central Time, so, you know, 6:30 yeah. whatever, Eastern Time. And they ran late, and he didn't even start until long after they were scheduled to end. So because of that, they had to reschedule some stuff later in the week. They dropped some speakers out. They kind of moved everything around on the fly to try to keep it from being too long. Yeah. Which, again, is a sign that the conventions are no longer really about serious work. They're now just rallying moments for the party.
Sure.
Which is kind of unfortunate because the Democrats had a chance to have a real convention. Right? They had a chance to pick a candidate on the floor of the Democratic National Convention, and they basically said, no, we're not going to try to do that. I'm sorry, I blanked on your original question.
No, that's all right. So I mean, your impression is, I mean, there's not much as far as a conspiracy here to sideline Joe Biden. You think it was just bad logistics?
I mean, they made the choice to downplay him during the convention because he's not the candidate now.
Right.
So
right.
In that sense, it was.
But as far
choice.
As the plan to schedule him against, Stephen Colbert.
Oh no. I think that was not anyone's plan. I think they just ran late because things run late.
All right. Well, I do want to talk about some of the weird things that he said, and I'll confess, I've been getting my Joe Biden and my Donald Trump these last year and a half, you know, through the sound bites. I haven't really listened to a whole lot of full speeches. I mean, you know, Trump's convention speech might have been the first speech that I listened to from start to finish from Trump. I mean, since maybe 2020. But this is also the first Joe Biden speech that I've listened to from start to finish. I mean, I'm just going to list a few weird things. First of all, I mean, I feel like he kind of led the pack as far as the Project 25 boogeyman. He was just obsessed with Project 25. He made the claim that he and Kamala Harris gave public school teachers a raise, even though public school teachers are paid by county and state governments. He said no hyperbole so many times that I just stopped counting. At one point, I mean, he said, I had to take executive action, which, you know, again, maybe that's just something that, you know, we don't even deny anymore that Congress is irrelevant. But then he also said, you know, who could lead the world other than the United States of America, which is something that, you know, two nights later, you know, Barack Obama would almost directly contradict. He bragged about the deal that, you know, sent a convicted arms dealer to Russia in exchange for a WNBA player. I mean, just
right.
Coyle, there's just so much weird here. I mean, what is this always how Joe Biden sounds?
I mean, it's been a while since I've listened to a full Joe Biden speech too.
I
did not interpret that as weird. I interpreted that as Biden trying to rally the crowd. Right.
I
interpreted that as this is what the people he's talking to want to hear, the successes of his administration.
Okay.
The Project 2025 stuff, that was all through the convention. I don't know how many speakers had their giant coffee table book copy of it. At one point, one of them ripped
the page out of it. I feel like that was in the swag bag.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be. I will admit, I looked that up to see if I could find one. So they must have had it specially printed just for the DNC.
So this is going to be like a eBay, like a big eBay find before long.
I'm sure. For our one or two listeners who don't know what Project 2025 is, the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank in D.C., has basically put together a complete transition package. It's here's all of the policies we want the Trump administration to work on when they win in 2024 and take office in 2025. It includes a list of candidates for office. For political appointees, you know, here are names that we know are good, solid conservatives that we want in this in these various offices in the federal government when Trump wins. I will go ahead and say I am not pearl clutching about this the way most of the world seems to be. Think tanks are allowed to have policy preferences.
Yes, and they have for some time.
What's off about this, and why you're getting the Trump mailer saying I don't have anything to do with Project 2025, what's off here is that historically this sort of work is primarily done by the political party. And yeah. The political party, the Republican Party, is in such abject chaos that they have not done the work that they should be doing preparing right. for a coming presidential election. Right. This is Project 2025 is basically something that the Republicans should have their own version of. And as far as I know, right. they don't.
I mean, is it roughly, I mean, what would have been a party platform pre-Trump?
It's more detailed than that, right? The platform okay, is the right, bones, right. but then you have,
yeah.
you have,
because
you
know, I'll confess, I mean, I've read a few pages of it, but I certainly haven't waded into the doorstop that is Project 2025.
Oh, and I don't think there's any reason to. I mean, Trump has basically distanced himself from it.
Yeah.
And even though there's all those former Trump staffers who are involved in creating it, you can't trust Trump to implement anything he says he'll implement.
Right.
So
right.
Even if he wins, there's no guarantee that Project 2025 will mean anything or go anywhere.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And he has said
and,
that. It
and listeners, what Coyle was referring to just a moment ago is that now that I live in a swing state, which wasn't the case for 20 years, but you know now Georgia is a toss up in any given federal election. I am getting daily mailers from the Harris and the Trump campaigns, and the Trump campaigns now, I mean, really before the convention, started putting in just about every one of their mail pieces that, you know, Donald Trump disavows Project 2025, has nothing to do with it, doesn't want to implement it, so on and so forth.
Yeah, so again, we could talk about Project 2025 with literally any speaker. Up yes. to and including Kamala Harris. So
yes, indeed.
It was over and over and over, and it was a easy sort of one-stop target for the Democrats. Is why they were using it, which makes sense. Like it's a easy thing to target. In terms of Biden's overall speech, obviously the good point of parallel I think is his performance at the debate, and yeah. this was mm-hmm. miles ahead better. Right, he was on.
Absolutely.
Stuck to the teleprompter. He was, you know, delivered the speech as well as you can, given his stage in life. I don't expect, you know, theatrics from an 82-year-old, but
right,
you know, he did fine. It was a good, solid presidential speech.
Unless it's Ian McKellen.
Well, yeah, okay, right. from a non-actor, 82-year-old.
Yes, there you go.
So, I thought it was fine. As with all of these speeches, basically without any meaningful substance.
Go ahead. He was not.
Oh, yeah. He and all of the other speakers are very much not saying, this is what we actively want to do. Right. That was in none of the speeches. You're just not going to find a policy there.
No legislative proposals.
Nope.
Right. No, and I'm going to try not to turn this entire episode into my therapy session, but I mean, I think it was when I was watching the Biden speech that I realized that the irrational anger was real, because I'll confess, I mean, when he said that, you know, we gave A's, I mean, the only thought that I could sustain for, I mean, a solid minute after that is, why are all these idiots applauding that? Don't they know that the federal government doesn't write any school teacher paychecks?
Why do you hate your raise, Nathan?
Hey, I'll tell you what. I mean, Brian Kemp gave me that raise. And at this point, he can't buy my vote because he's midway into his second term. So, you know, I found out today that it bumped me into a new tax bracket. So actually, like, the raise got wiped out before I ever got it. So that was fun.
Anything else about Biden? Otherwise, we should move on to the second round of former presidents, if we're counting Biden as a former president at this point.
Yeah, might as well.
All right. So what did you think about the Obamas?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the Obamas, I guess if the GOP had theme nights, the DNC had royal family nights, because we started out with the Bidens and then we went to the Obamas, and then third night we had the Clintons. So let's talk the Obamas, right? Like I said, I mean, Barack Obama almost directly contradicts Joe Biden, which made me scratch my head. You know, I mean, Joe Biden says, you know, only the United States can lead the world. Barack Obama says we shouldn't even be the world's policeman, which I thought was odd. They were
it's
very
a nice little George W. Bush quote, too.
Oh, yeah. That's a recurring motif at this convention, too, is that what I think of as conservative rhetoric, the GOP has abandoned. So, I mean, the DNC says, hey, I mean, if we can pick some people up with this rhetoric, why not?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Michelle and Barack Obama, I mean, you know, they had in common that they used battle rhetoric, you know, very frequent mentions of a fight for America. They're both disciplined in their use of the joy motif that, again, came out of seemingly nowhere. And for that reason, I mean, you know, both of their speeches, you know, I said last time that, you know, J.D. Vance stood out at the RNC because he talked like he had read a book at some point. And I know for a fact that Barack and Michelle Obama are very intelligent, very literate people, but they, their speeches, I mean, I would say by design, because I have to think that speech writers worked very hard on them, you know, made very sure not to mention any ideas that would provoke any kind of thought. And, you know, I mean, for that reason, I mean, I'm sure this was a tonic for the partisans, you know, because you didn't have Joe Biden, you know, making you, you know, giving you heart attacks every 3 minutes, like, oh God, what's he going to say now? But, you know, I mean, for people like me, I mean, they were just kind of air. There wasn't anything to it. Like you said, there's no policy, but there really weren't any major ideas either. It was just, you know, feel-good speeches, which is what a convention is about, I realize. But, you know, I always kind of hope for more when I've got a speaker up there who really has some real intelligence, as both of them do. And, you know, they didn't. They didn't give us any ideas, just feel good.
I mean, there were some, and because this is kind of where we're at with our society now, especially Barack Obama's speech, the calls to sort of basic decency and listening to the other side, that starts to sound more and more like it's deep and meaningful. Like things that 20 years ago would have been just the assumption, well, yeah, of course you treat each other decently and you listen to the other side and so on. Now, all of a sudden, he sounds like the only adult in the room, or the Democrats, I guess, because that was another theme, was kind of basic decency.
Sure.
We'll not talk bad about the other side, with the exclusion of Donald Trump. So that was I remember that from the speech. But in terms of substance, no, I remember that being said. I don't remember any specific anything else.
No. I mean, you know. There were a few jokes that landed, a few that didn't, but, yeah. You know, as far as substance, and I don't even mean particular policies, I just mean even political ideas, there really weren't. I mean, it was just, you know, let's be decent, and also, you know, we need to work hard on this campaign. That was also a theme that I didn't hear at the GOP, and I might just not have been listening, but what occurred to me was with Cortez and with the Obamas and with several other speakers, there was an active call to work for the campaign. Is that something that happened at the GOP and I just missed it? Or is this something that was peculiar to the DNC?
I don't remember that at the GOP, so I don't
know. Okay. All right. Because like I said, it jumped out at me mentally, but then I started doubting myself. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, Hulk Hogan said we need to work on this campaign also, and I just missed it.
I will, in terms of something being memorable, I guess, are anything else on the Obamas? Otherwise,
No. Go ahead.
So the Bill Clinton made the point, and Barack Obama sort of made this generally, and Clinton actually got a little more specific. He talked about, you know, splitting his time between New York City and rural Arkansas, and the importance of going out and actually talking to the people who are voting for Donald Trump and listening to what they have to say, and realizing why they're making the arguments that they're making. So Obama made the sort of broad, we should listen to the other side statement. Clinton gave specific examples. It was like, I talk to these folks all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And
that makes sense.
We need to, like, this needs to be a part of what the party is. So there is some kind of call for a broadening of the Democratic Party. I don't think any practical action is going to come as a result of it. And I think it took two former presidents, you know, 16 years worth of presidential experience to even say that at the convention. I don't remember hearing anyone else say it, other than Kamala at one point said she'd be the president for everyone. So she, I guess, gave a small nod to that.
Right. Which I feel like, was that also a George W. Bush line?
I'm sure it was.
Okay. Because I remember thinking that when she said that, I'm thinking, okay, that's, I feel like I heard George W. Bush say that at some point. But. I mean, you know, and again, in 2000 and 2004, that would have been, well, of course, you know.
Right.
But now, I mean, you know, it sounds very profound, but, you know, I'm actually going to show some concern for people who didn't vote for me.
What else did you think about Bill and Hillary? It's been a while since I've heard from either of them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll confess that I did laugh out loud when Hillary said that, you know, we need to be careful that we don't go down, quote, crazy conspiracy rabbit holes, end quote. You know, I mean, I guess she missed the entire Mueller investigation. but, you know, other than that, I mean, you know, the Clintons and the Obamas, I think of them as the Democratic machine, right? You know, at least for, you know, my adult life. You know, I realized that, you know, before then, I mean, we have other luminaries of the party, you know, in roughly speaking the Kennedy-Johnson era. But, I mean, in, you know, within my voting years, the Clintons and the Obamas I think of as the machine, and they all talked like a political machine, right? I mean, they didn't make mistakes. They were very disciplined, you know, invoking joy. You know, they hit the, you know, abortion mention, but didn't get into any, you know, are we talking a constitutional amendment? Are we talking about a federal, you know, statute? Nothing like that. So, I mean, you know, what I heard from really all four of those speeches was just the discipline that, you know, I was just reminded, you know, hasn't characterized American politics for about 10 years now.
Well, and worth noting that they were there, right? George W. Bush was not at the Republican convention.
No.
And Dan Quayle, even, of all people, was not at the Republican convention. I mean, it's the existing figures on the Republican side were basically absent. Speakers of the House, Mike Johnson was there, but the former speakers who are still living, none of them were there. I mean, it was the Democratic convention. The celebrities were absent, but this was all of the bigwigs of the party.
Right.
Were present and accounted for. And then who I assume the apparatus is saying this is the future, right? The Kentucky governors and the North Carolina governors,
right,
and Pennsylvania governors. They were also there. The Clintons and the Obamas, they're the people who have done it in the past, and we also want these people who are going to, you know, be the future. Which is how Obama got, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I remember well. I mean, that's one of the few speeches I remember from 2004.
Yep.
Was, you know, Obama's, you know, kind of public emergence.
I remember thinking, who is this guy, and why am I listening to this nobody? Now we know.
And I was thinking, I mean, as you're saying that, Coyle, I mean, you know, if you would ask the question of the GOP convention, you know, I mean, who carries the torch when Trump is not carrying the torch anymore? It seems like the only answer is J.D. Vance.
I mean, people during the primary tried to claim the mantle. So Vivek Ramaswamy tried to run in that direction. Ron DeSantis is trying to do that. But yeah.
But
none,
I mean,
of them
they weren't featured the way that, you're right, I mean, the governors and other younger, you know, public officials were at the DNC. So, I mean, there's definitely, I know I keep returning to that word discipline, but, I mean, there's a more disciplined presentation of who's coming along 4 years from now at the DNC than there was at the GOP, to be sure.
Yeah. We should turn to the main event, right? Waltz, Harrison Waltz.
Yes,
so you
yes.
didn't like Waltz's speech.
Man, I'll tell you what, I, you know, the however many days it's been since, you know, Joe Biden dropped out, I have been just eaten alive by volleyball. So, I mean, you know, like I said, I boned up on this through YouTube.
So you've had enough of coaches.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know, I had read a dozen articles about how likable and folksy Tim Walz is. So, I mean, I was kind of ready for, and I'm trying to think of the figure that I think of is Evan Bayh. And I realize Evan Bayh is the son of an Indiana senator, so he's not exactly folksy, but he is from Indiana, and I'm from Indiana. So, you know, his personal demeanor, despite my policy disagreements with him, was always one of politeness and one of deference and one of, you know, he was a pre-reality TV politician, right? So that's what I was kind of expecting when I, you know, queued up Tim Walz's speech. And instead, like I said before, I mean, what I felt like I got was, I mean, Hulk Hogan 2.0. You know, I mean, it was like these clumsy comparisons between football and politics. You know, I mean, it's this implausible story that he grew up in this rural town of 400, but, you know, we didn't care who people married or what religion they practiced. I'm like, so the whole lot of Hindus and trans people in your Midwestern town of 400? And then, you know, the implausibility, you know, just kind of continued as, you know, he made the word freedom mean whatever he wanted. And at this point, again, the irrational anger I realize is coming through. You know, he made the obligatory Project 25 boogeyman segment. And, you know, like I said, I mean, by the time I got done, I could tell the crowd loved him, but he just seems like he is a construct. And the funny thing is, I mean, I feel like he's a construct in a way that J.D. Vance isn't. Like, J.D. Vance, I mean, I basically know who he is because I've read his book. He's a Yale Law School graduate who has a mamaw who has 19 hit firearms and also a lot of drug-addicted cousins, which, you know, I mean, sub in a University of Georgia PhD, and that's basically my story, right? But, you know, Walls, like I said, I mean, I just felt like I was looking at a facade. I mean, is this my irrational anger clouding my judgment, Coyle?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely taking the opposite of the cultural reaction to these two. You're flipping it around. Have you seen the video yet of J.D. Vance going into some kind of donut shop and then trying to interact with the...
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
And then the parallel clip is Tim Walz going into Runza, which is this fantastic kind of upper Midwestern chain. If you haven't been to a Runza, you should absolutely take a chance and go there. Like hitting it off, 100% hitting it off with the staff. Like, they're excited to see him. Now, some of that I have heard other podcasters podcasters talking about. That's a failure of like the advanced team.
Yes.
Like your team should have had that prepped and ready to go for J.D. Vance. But also, if you're a politician, you should be able to roll with that.
With that, I agree. Like I said, not necessarily his. I guess here's the thing. Vance, I don't think, is trying to pretend to be folksy. I mean, he tells people he's a Yale Law School grad.
Right.
So, I mean, it might not be a character type that people enjoy, but you know the character type.
Sure.
I feel like Walls is a cipher with a folksy sheen on him.
I mean, maybe. I guess I get the impression that he actually is this kind of just nice older gentleman. Like, he's the guy that if he lived next door to me, I'd be like, he's a great neighbor, right?
Okay, fair enough.
Now, with that said, there are things I don't like about him. I think it's telling that of the, you know, Midwestern governors that Harris could have picked as her running mate, she picked the most liberal one.
Sure,
She picked the one that is least likely to draw voters from the Republicans, and kind of signaled that, hey, she is really concerned primarily with her kind of left of center base vote and less concerned with the center and center right vote that she had a chance to get if she'd gone with Shapiro or if she'd gone with Beshears or if she'd gone with any of the other, even Whitmer isn't as far to the left.
Whitmer, okay, make the case for Whitmer.
Well, just not as far to the left as Walz.
Right? Okay, all right, that's fair enough. Yeah, and I guess I just think because of her public profile with COVID, I would think that she'd be a bigger lightning rod for.
Oh, sure. And certainly she's the cluster of Midwestern governors. I don't know as much about the governor of Illinois. He's a billionaire, so I suppose the Democrats wouldn't like him as much. But Whitmer's, you know, the second of them, like after Walz in terms of how liberal. So
right.
But either Shapiro or Beshears would have drawn some Republican votes. Maybe they're just assuming they've got Pennsylvania.
That seems like a weird assumption.
I don't know. Kentucky, I don't know that they're going to get, but maybe it would have put it in play if they'd gone with Beshear. So I
could imagine choice. Beshear as a counterweight to Vance, you know, because he is in that coal belt.
But yeah, so I had a more positive reaction to Walz.
Okay, all right. No, and that's perfectly fine. Like I said, I think honestly he might be a victim of overhype because this was my very first exposure to him.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, he's been in the national eye for, what, like 2 weeks now?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
But, give it time. Again, every time I hear him mentioned, it's, you know, he's likable, he's folksy, he's Midwestern, he's not one of these, you know, politicians. And then, like I said, I mean, I think it was the cognitive dissonance that got me when he was talking about, you know, his small town full of, you know, Hindus and bisexuals. And I, you know,
well, I mean, he didn't say that. He said, we don't care who you marry. And to be fair, they probably didn't, because it just wasn't on anyone's radar. Right. But
let me put it to you this way. I mean, if the local paper had said that there'd been a same-sex wedding in town when he was a kid, or when he was growing up.
I assume he was referenced. I don't know. I assume that if he had to fill that out with anything other than feel-good platitudes, right? If he had to give that any substance.
Right.
I assume what he would have meant is, you can marry a minority if you want to, and people in town won't.
Okay.
People in town won't.
And I guess because every other mention of marriage that I can remember in the convention had to do with the, you know, Obergefell decision.
Yep.
I think that's where my mind automatically went. I mean, now that you say that, that makes
more
sense.
Well, that's where he wanted your mind to go, right? That is certainly the intent of the message. But if you've been like, hey, can you explain, give us some details? I assume, as someone from, you know, Nebraska, right? He grew up in Nebraska. As someone from Nebraska, this is probably the response would have been, well, you know, you can marry a minority and people in town will just not care because we don't care what other people do. All of the modern stuff that we're dealing with wasn't on anyone's radar when he was growing up.
Yeah, point taken. And I guess that's what I took him to be doing, is mapping 2024 stuff back onto 1978.
Sure. I mean, I think you're also probably interpreting what he was doing.
Yeah.
Until the second someone pushes him on it. And
Right.
What about anything else about Waltz? Otherwise, we should move on to Harris.
I mean, you know, he's another one of the old white guys who tried to be edgy by cussing, him and Joe Biden. So, I mean, you know, again, I get it, but it still irritates me. And again, irrational anger, I'll grant it. But yeah, I mean, let's move on to Harris, because I'll confess, Coyle, this was my first extended exposure to Harris, full stop. You know, I mean, when she was in the 2019 primaries, because I don't think she even made it to the year 2020, did she?
She dropped out, I think in late December of 2019.
Yeah.
It might have been early January.
But it was close.
Before any actual
close.
Votes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I really didn't pay attention to her back then. You know, I mean, when she was announced as the VP pick back in 2020, you know, I mean, honestly, I was so busy trying to learn how to teach online that I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention. So, I mean, you know, this is the first time I really heard her story. This is the first time that I really, you know, again, listened to a speech of hers from start to finish. I've heard sound bites. And, you know, honestly, I came away with a much more positive impression of Harris than I did of Walls, which I didn't expect going in. Because, again, all of the hype has been, you know, Harris is awkward and she doesn't know how to work a crowd and, you know, all this sort of stuff. So, again, this might have been the opposite of the Walls effect, where Walls was overhyped and the bar was set so low for Harris that I said, man, she jumped over that one with both feet.
Well, and it helps that it was such a short speech. I mean, it was, I think, under 40 minutes.
Yes.
This episode is going to be longer than her speech.
I appreciated that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's certainly true. Again, by mostly avoiding substance, I think the two positions that we got out of her is defense of Israel, we're going to defend Israel, and then abortion was mentioned.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I mean, it was.
And then the Project 25 boogeyman.
Yeah.
Can't forget the Project 25 boogeyman.
Right. We will stop that, I guess, insofar as that's a policy position.
Well, you know what? As a campaign promise, they're going to slam dunk that sucker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's if they win, Project 2025.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, come 2028, you know, every politician at the DNC convention will say, we stood up and we stopped Project 2025.
There was this this interesting moment, and I don't remember which think tank it was. So back in 2016, the Federalist Society is the one that first became sort of known for this kind of activity. Every think tank does variations on this.
It's really not
a big deal. But this took a kind of national prominence in 2016 when the Federalist Society came out with a list of judges.
Oh, I remember that.
People
that
they thought would be good judges. Donald Trump said, I will pick Supreme Court judges, state court judges, or federal court judges from this list.
Yep.
And there was this brief moment, I don't remember which one it was, but there was a left-wing think tank. It was like, hey, we should do the same thing. We should come up with a list of acceptable judges. And the guy who'd said that came up with a few. And I don't know that that ever went anywhere because the Democratic Party does that. Like, they don't need the think tank to do that.
Yeah, they have their own in-house policy writers.
Yeah, and it's just the Republicans are not doing a good job of that these days.
Yeah,
so
the GOP
you're right.
Social.
I mean, you're absolutely right. The Democrats are going to have a slam dunk on this if they win.
Right.
It's the death of Project 2025.
Oh, no. Even if they lose, because then they'll be able to say, Donald Trump wanted that Project 2025, but we stood up and stopped him.
Oh, well, that's true.
Which means in 2028, I mean, you know, every speaker is going to say,
right.
The DNC, we're going to stop the Frost Giants.
Right. They got their good PR people. They can do that. But yes, that was definitely mentioned in Kamala's speech. Anything else about her speech?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a few things. I mean, you know, never complain about injustice, but do something about it. Again, I mean, I felt like that is something that really would have played better than the incessant joy drinking game. Like, you know, don't complain, do something about it. Don't complain, do something about it. I mean, I feel like every speaker at this convention should have been, you know, retailing that line so that, you know, when Harris hit it, I mean, it would have been something the crowd is chanting back at her. So, I mean,
you know, I'd settle for just don't complain, full stop.
Well, you and I, yes, but as political rhetoric, though,
that is
much better than, you know, the president of joy. Like that, you know, that doesn't mean anything. At least this has some kind of resonance in, you know, the King James Bible. It has some kind of resonance in public rhetoric. I said, I mean, you know, when I heard her say that, I thought, man, there was the opportunity. And, you know, like I said, my exposure to Kamala Harris has been almost nil. And, you know, I was very impressed with her for the most part. Now, I mean, when she got towards the end of her speech and she started talking about the, you know, abortion intelligence agency that Trump was going to establish, I mean, I thought, okay, now the DNC has found their death panels. Because, you know, now, you know, it's going to be, oh, yes, you know, they have secret plans to make this abortion intelligence agency and, you know, check every woman's uterus as they go through airports or I don't even know. But I mean, it did sound, I mean, frankly, I mean, beyond alarmist. I mean, it just sounded, I hate to use Tim Walz's word, it sounded weird.
Yeah, I don't know the background there. Having not read Project 2025, who knows? And I don't all the joy stuff. So I'm sort of with you. I know a little more about Kamala Harris. I watched her theatrics on the floor of the Senate when she was, you know, clearly gearing up her presidential run when Kavanaugh was going through his nominations.
Yeah, and I've read about that, but I haven't seen any of the video.
I mean, it was her and Cory Booker were obviously teeing up their presidential campaign.
Oh yeah,
And then during the 2020 presidential campaign, during 2019. Her campaign started off fairly well, mostly by attacking Joe Biden for working with Democrats, with Southern Democrats who had opposed to busing. Not necessarily for his position on busing, although that was kicked around a little bit.
Right.
Mostly for working with people who had opposed it.
Yeah.
She sort of directly attacked him, and then Tulsi Gabbard pointed out.
You mean
the
for
stuff
trying to be a president
said,
for all Americans?
Yeah.
Anyway, right. Go ahead. I'm irrational anger. Keep going.
No, I understand. And then Tulsi Gabbard pointed out the stuff that she had said undone as prosecutor in California. That was basically the end of her campaign, right? That her campaign tanked after that.
I mean, because she was she was one of the lieutenants in the war on drugs, and I mean, the war on drugs among the DNC is very unpopular right now.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm not overly nuts about it either, but
not
because I'm pro drug. I just don't think it was handled very well.
Right.
So I don't know much about how she has been as vice president. My understanding is they have largely kept her out of the limelight.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible she has in fact been the vice president of joy and is now ready to take that promotion. I honestly have no idea.
Right.
Maybe every speech she gives is just riddled with joy, and I'm never gonna know because I've not seen a Vice President Harris speech.
Right. But like I said, I mean, I guess this is and I know, I mean, we need to separate, you know, speechwriter from candidate. But I mean, you know, whatever speechwriter and whatever workshopping process gave us that phrase, and I mean I wrote it down word for word because I mean I felt like it was the strongest rhetoric at this convention, right? never complain about injustice, but do something about it. Like, that is your campaign theme right there, right? And like I said, I mean, they didn't.
Doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, though. You need something that people can put up as their, you know, as their profile picture on Facebook
and
Instagram.
True enough.
There's too many words in that. It's going to be too small, and no one will know what you're
right,
asking.
You just put the word
joy up.
Compound sentence. Compound sentence.
Yep. Yep. Got to remember, you're dealing with, you know, lazy, ignorant Americans, right? It's got to be memorable, and it's got to be short, and it's got to be identifiable with a single shot.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. I mean, you know, broad impressions before we get to the sideshow, because you know I love the sideshow, is that, I mean, you know, first of all, I think the best political rhetoric came out of Harris's speech. I think that the rest of the convention should have started with the text of that speech and built out from that, and they didn't. And second of all, I mean, the old canard that nobody is pro-abortion, boy, I hope that one's dead, because that was four nights of a whole lot of people who are pro-abortion.
Yeah, I mean, they carefully gave no substance to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you are a Bill Clinton-style Democrat and you want to say safe, legal, and rare, you could watch that entire convention and say, yep, I agree with that. If you are the 2016 Democratic convention where the president of Planned Parenthood gives a very, like, we she didn't quite say we want there to be more, but like...
No. But she did say, I had an abortion as an applause line.
Yes. So if you want that, you can read that into it, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that wasn't even shout your abortion. That was, let's actually enact shout your abortion on primetime TV.
Right. Right. So again, they left that open, right?
Uh-huh.
They tried to catch in that wide net the full spectrum of people who are in favor of it. Obviously not going to win any pro-lifers over, but
neither party's trying to get pro-lifers at this point.
Well, that's true. It's leaving the door open for all stripes of pro-choicers. No one should feel like, at least from the Democratic perspective, no one should feel like if you're pro-choice, you're left out here.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. What were your big impressions?
It was kind of long. especially that first night.
You watched more than I did, Coyle, so I'll hand that one to you.
So again, production values, given that they only had a couple of weeks to get ready with the transition from Biden to Harris.
Right.
Given that, the production values were still far superior to anything the Republicans had. And that's been the case for the last two or three conventions. Some of that is just who you have on your team.
Yep.
Again, Hollywood is very much Team Democrat. And I'm not even talking A-listers here. Special effects people, you know, cameramen, graphic artists, I mean, all of that.
Yep.
You have a bigger team to pull from. The music was better.
Yes.
Because they actually paid for copyright for performance of actual performances instead of just the house band doing it.
Right.
I'm still thinking about this. If we're just going to say the vote for the candidate no longer really matters, then it probably is fine that they had a DJ playing during the roll call vote.
Mm-hmm.
Like aggressively playing during the roll call vote, trying to line up the music with the state and all of that.
Right.
I might have questions about why some states got some music, but you know.
Right. It's kind of like a walk up music at a minor league ball game.
Yeah, I mean, if we wanted to pretend that, you know, conventions still do something important, then that was maybe inappropriate. Maybe it should have been a more serious and formal roll call. But again, they were very clear. This is just ceremonial. It's just ceremonial. Might as well have some.
And in Schumer's case, it was actually a dance number.
That was the highlight of the convention for me.
Coyle, I went and found that video on the strength of your Facebook comment, and it was worth every moment.
The absolute delight that Chuck Schumer had when dancing on stage. Holy cow. Like that made the entire 50-hour thing worthwhile, or however long it was.
Yeah, much
better produced. And then again, you got my earlier points. It's Joe Biden was a non-entity at this.
Yep.
And policy was a non-entity at this. And instead, we're going to be normal. Abortion was there. They're running on that. But really, we're going to be normal and decent. Normalcy and decency is what we're aiming for.
Yeah. Well, which again, I keep returning to this, but I mean, it's a pity that was the theme instead of don't complain about injustice, do something about it. Because I mean, that is a call to action in a way that normalcy and decency isn't.
Right, right. Well, we should move into sideshows.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. All right, so I'm gonna start with the ones that were less impressive and end with my favorite, which I've already mentioned because I'm no good at playing poker. But Mark Hamill absolutely crashed and burned. You know, don't turn to the orange side. He should have had a comedian workshop that joke with him because that was just ill-advised. Yeah. Steve Kerr is just not interesting. This is also an instance of irrational anger, not because of any political parties, but because he replaced Mark Jackson as head coach over in San Francisco, and Mark Jackson was the point guard for the Indiana Pacers, so I still take this personally. Oprah says, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote for, which I thought was great. That's a great thing to say at a political convention. You know, I did wonder as soon as I heard her say that, I'm like, did anyone workshop Oprah's speech with her? And then I thought, who workshops Oprah? You like, I'm sure they just gave her, you know, the microphone and said, go to it.
Sure.
But my favorite sideshow was Stevie Wonder, who, like I said, I felt like he gave a more serious campaign speech than Tim Walz did. And also, he gave me my favorite pull my hair out convention moment when he was leading a full stadium sing-along of Higher Ground, and the entire DNC left him hanging. And I will note, Coyle, that in my house, as I was watching this on YouTube, I was singing along with Higher Ground loudly and badly, but none of those Fair DNC enough. People knew their Stevie Wonder, and you know, it was just another reminder why I can never be part of this group.
Fair enough.
What have you got for sideshows?
I mean, yeah, I think you hit the majority of them. I kind of tune out when they bring the celebrities in because I sort of assume that they're not going to have anything meaningful to say. Not that anything meaningful is said at conventions anyway. Honestly, I thought some of the Republican sideshows were the more interesting ones.
Oh, absolutely.
So there were several former Trump administration employees there, basically talking about things that Trump did and said and why that meant no one should ever vote for him.
Yep.
It won't actually mean anything for the Trump crowd, but still, like, I thought that was probably the most effective part of the convention.
Sure, sure.
Adam Kinzinger's speech was great. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was solid. Glad he was there. Glad he said the stuff he said.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Anything else out of the DNC? Otherwise, we're already at, I think, just over an hour.
Yeah, Probably. We should have some mercy on the listeners.
Well, and, you know, conventions aren't worth that much time.
But, you know, Coyle, so. I think this last hour, if I had to summarize it, joy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm feeling the joy. If we just keep saying it over and over.
I guess we didn't talk about it.
We didn't talk about the lack of joy outside the convention hall, but the protests did not turn into full-fledged riots.
Which surprised me, honestly. I mean, did the Columbia protest just run out of gas, or...
Oh, I don't know. I was thinking more 68.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, I mean, I figured the energy from April might rekindle in Chicago, but nothing ever happened.
No, there were still protests. Yeah. Like they were still
there's
there.
There's always protests outside the convention, though. So.
It may be that Chicago just had its act together and they kept things clamped down. I honestly don't know. Because there weren't riots, I didn't bother to do any follow-up.
Yeah, point taken. All right, well, next time, I think we're going to do another What If episode, and this one's going to be What If a President Actually Did Cede a Century's Worth of Authority Back to Congress? And, you know, I love these speculative fiction episodes. You know, Coyle usually says, yeah, there's no way of knowing, and I say, yeah, but it's more fun to speculate.
We will find out what that speculation looks like.
Very good.
Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, and the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway.